You can be the most beautiful, talented woman in the world, and you hit 40, adios.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode, geez, I just love the title.
Told you.
Season 4, episode 26, Triumph of the Bill.
Yeah.
Nope.
Somebody doesn't know their history.
Mm-hmm.
And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
I mean, you'll see this in the copy. Like, usually I close it out with something like that references, you know, the title in a cute way. I deliberately did not.
Stay tuned next week for Matt Kampf.
Anyway, hi.
Hi, Tara and Dave. So, here's a property in which they're probably not doing this.
Yeah.
Again with this, episode 78. It drops January 7th. We'll be watching Heather Locklear in Muppets Tonight. It is on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes.
Yep.
If you would like to listen to that in the 77 episodes before it, and at the $5 level and up, our coverage of 90210 OMG, the Jenny and Tori podcast, all of that is available at patreon.com/againwiththis. We really hope that you join us and you get on the Discord server. We have a really fun time talking about this stuff and a lot of other stuff. So patreon.com/againwiththis.
Yes,
come hang out.
Speaking of Again With Them, we will be dropping that slightly late. It is coming. Don't worry. There will be a December and some January episode, but that will be next week, January 13th. So hold tight, and then we'll get back to regular programming after this. But, you know, the holidays.
Indeed.
Let's get into this. Starting with our D plot, Sydney gets a new roommate. Sydney goes to see Alicia at the office. Bobby needs a job, so can Alicia give him one at the cable company he just lost due to his negligence and bad judgment? Not exactly how she puts it. Hey, ladies on this show, let men get their own jobs, for Christ's sake. This is CC Joe Reynolds. Like, let them sort their own shit out, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sydney pitches on. Alicia won't find anyone who knows the company better than Bobby. Alicia's dubious, so Sydney replies thusly, clip two.
You rode his coattails while he laid the groundwork. And now that the dust has settled, you're on Easy Street and he's in the toilet.
Oh, that's way too many metaphors for me to sort.
That I was just writing that when Alicia's like,
same here.
Pick a lane.
Yeah, I will give him credit for acknowledging the hacky phrasing this time.
Yes.
But Sydney then suggests that Alicia was the one who set Bobby up. Clip three.
His father brought him down. It was strictly a family matter. Everybody knows that.
Oh, really?
Yes, really.
Well, then why would you have a problem hiring him?
Don't overplay your hand, Sydney. I'll think about it. Let's just leave it at that.
What?
Why would
you have a problem hiring him? And the piano's like, good point. And I'm like, look, piano, explain to me what's happening here, because.
Yes. Again, like, why would you not want to hire him to work at the company he lost because he fucked up? Like, seems obvious.
And also whose office he wants to reoccupy, having just like destroyed it last week.
Smashed it up.
I mean, I understand that this is a soap and everyone has to all be together forever.
Right.
Until someone dies, quote unquote. And B, that pieces are just in motion right now because mm-hmm. we're in the high 20s episode wise. But still, sometimes these scenes just go on and on. And it's like, if you're going to do this and use it for just setup purposes, you have to hurry up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we really have time to look down over the canyon and be like, oh, there's not a pathway here.
Yeah.
Everybody's falling. So, yeah, it's not a fan.
It's funny to me as someone who watches contemporary primetime soaps to see how much better writers are today at doing this. And granted, they're in some cases doing 8 or 10 or 13 episodes as opposed to 5,000 a season like they were.
And
on
it's 39 minutes instead of 45, which it really does make a difference having that extra time for people to just sort of be staring into the middle distance before the ad break, that it's mm-hmm. like, if they can speed it up, you don't notice it as much, is definitely a problem. But
yeah. Anyway, then we're in an airplane hangar with Bobby as Sydney exposits that he turned down Alicia's job offer to work as a mechanic, which, like, so would I under the circumstances. But there's a shot in the sequence, and you can see it in the visual aids, where Sydney crosses behind Bobby, and he's so large, and she's so small. She is completely invisible other than, like, the toe of her boot. And I'm not even joking. Like, this is in the visual aids. He completely blocked her out of existence.
Complete Sidner eclipse.
Yes!
Totally. But I like, made a clip you can't really see, because to get both of them in the frame, because he's, you know, three times her size, it was a little challenging. But he's wearing, like, you know, mechanic drag, like a thermal with the coveralls over it, and she's in a relatively non-lunatic version of her Batgirl thing, and they both look cute. Like, he should wear mechanic gear more.
It suits him.
It's better than the suit, especially since this is the 90s and all suits are massive. And it just really makes him look like the Capitol Records building. It's not good.
Yeah. The only reason that I would want a Bobby suit jacket to stay around is so that, like, maybe Amanda or Sydney put it on sometime and it's, like, down to their mid calf because it's a 90s suit and the jackets are long. Anyway.
Yeah.
Bobby claims that he loves this job, and Sydney nervously stumbles over her words before saying she wants him to move in with her. And he thinks he should be alone for a while, but she knows he's going to get evicted from his rental soon, and he could just stay with her until he got back on his feet. He says he hates sofa beds. Yeah, no kidding. Because probably the end of the bed is, like, behind your knees. But she says she loves him and she would sleep on the sofa bed. And he obviously, once again, can't resist her nonsense, but says that if he did move in with her, it would have to be platonic. And she pretends to agree. And as he walks her to her car, she comments that Howard Hughes got his start working on planes, which, like, she means, you know, money wise, this is promising. But there's more to the Howard Hughes story than that, just saying. And that's where we leave it with these two for now. On to the C-plot. Meet Rita. Michael wakes up in the beach house next to Betsy, lying stiffly in a flannel nightgown. He starts feeling her up, alluding to their not having had sex in a while, but she tells him it's not a good time and rolls away. And if he's doing something wrong, he wants her to tell him so that he can fix it. They need some excitement back in their lives. So she uncrosses her arms and bravely tells him she's ready. Tori Spelling vibes. That's a joke for the Again Within listeners. Just $5 on Patreon. Patreon.com/againwiththis. Anyway, Michael starts to kiss her and then decides he would rather not try to have sex with a dead weight. And when he's gone, she clasps her hand over her chest and closes her eyes, but only for a second. And when she opens them again and sits up, she's someone new. Clip 4.
You blew it, Betsy.
No, she didn't.
Now it's my turn.
She gets out of bed.
Rita knows how to take care of her man.
Drops the nightgown and gets into the shower with Michael.
Want me to soap your back?
Whoa, baby. I like how you soap.
I mean, I feel like that was not the line, but they just left it in because Calabro is funny.
Totally. And as much as we hate this plot line, and we do, Marcia Cross is so good. You can tell this is a new persona just by the way she rakes her fingers through her hair. Like, it's instantaneous how good she is.
I mean, just for the, you know, people who are watching it in a bar with no sound, they like tweak the presentation so you could tell just by sight, but she does not need it. This is a pro stuck in a stupid plot line, and we wish her the best.
We do. So later, Rita, messy waves in her hair, dark lipstick, motorcycle jacket, no brassiere, comes to see Peter in his office. And Peter, who has not only known Kimberly for a year or so, but also knows she has been experiencing what seems to be dissociative identity disorder, addresses this person as though Kimberly has just had a makeover. Clip 5.
Hi. How's it going?
Cool. Everything's cool.
No more weird interludes? No more blackout spells?
I wasn't blacking out. I just wasn't myself.
You thought you were going crazy the last time we talked. You called yourself Betsy, ordered Tupperware.
That was just some role-playing therapy. Everything's under control now.
Why am I not reassured?
Hey, come on, we all have different personalities inside us. You almost killed Amanda once.
Thank you.
You'd probably kill four now.
Are you thinking about killing someone?
Give it a rest, Pete. I'm not a danger to myself or anyone else. Which reminds me, I won't be needing those downers anymore.
Well, from the looks of you, I don't think you're well enough to justify that, Kimberly.
I know I am. I just need your confidence in me so that I don't lose any ground. You see, those pills deaden my senses, and I need to get in touch with my real feelings.
If we try it your way, the first sign of trouble, you must resume your medication. Agreed?
I'll come back to this, but after he's left, she tells herself that doctors are such idiots. So why would Rita go see Peter at all? Like, even for story reasons, why have this scene happen if you're not going to have Sydney there seeing Kimberly and realize something's going on?
Right.
Like, at this point, none of us expects Peter to understand because he's not a psychiatrist, as we keep saying.
And... like, she's almost never at work either. Like, now that Sydney is not her patient, I think they forgot that that's even a thing.
Right. Yeah. Like, they had Sydney come to the house a couple of times on office business, but...
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, the next day, Kimberly's sitting in her office trying to figure out how she'll tell Michael about her DID, but then he opens the door and says some yo-yo parked his motorcycle in Kimberly's spot because, yes, of course, in addition to an office, a psychiatric student would definitely have a dedicated parking space. But anyway, the mention of the bike snaps Rita into control of the body. Clip six.
I'm the yo-yo. It's my bike. And I'm taking you on a road trip. Come on.
So is this the biker chick picks up the doctor fantasy?
Basically.
Yeah. I mean, should a doctor, I mean, he's also a surgeon.
Right.
LOL. Mm-hmm. So, and it's totally in character that he would not notice this, although I guess technically he should probably notice something. But
yeah,
I kind of love that Michael's like, this is weird. Well, fuck it.
Yes.
Because it's consistent. Consistent right. with him.
This is the kind of weird that gets me laid, so I'm fine with
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep.
The other kind, I did not like so much. The next
also,
day, Peter...
what's with all this Tupperware? I don't have room for this.
Hey, everyone needs Tupperware.
I agree. I would like to know if they have a couch yet.
Oh, good point. She said she ordered one, so presumably. But if it ends up looking
weeks.
Exactly like the last one, no one is going to be surprised. So the next day, Peter comes by her office to see Rita smoking a teeny cigar at her desk. And as he pets her hair, very weird stage business, he relays Michael's worries about the changes that he's noticed in Kimberly lately. But Rita's just becoming who she wants to be. And Peter says Kimberly's not just his patient, which is she? He also cares about her. He's concerned about her mood swings. And maybe he needs a session with her, she suggests. He thinks the show's strength is hiding boiling fear and that the lid's about to blow, and she blows a little smoke and fake yelps that she guesses her safety valve is working, which is cute. He thinks she needs to start seeing him daily again and go back on her meds. She states that she doesn't need that. He insists. She indulgently relents. And if she's not there at 9 a.m. the next day, he says, we're going to consider rehospitalization. A, who's we? B, who has that authority right now? C, are there still charges pending?
Oh, my God. Seriously.
We don't know. Anyway, he leaves and she throws her pills in the trash. And that's it for this plot line, because we obviously don't get answers on any of that. Onward to the B plot. Surprise, Richard is still coming for Jane. Jake goes into the garage and flirtatiously asks a butt on the ground if it is working on a new look, but then gets flustered when that butt turns out to be Claire's. She basically accuses him of avoiding her, and he admits that he has been. She had said she was in town for the weekend. There would be one great night and no complications. And that's what she intended, but then she met Jane at the conference and got the job. Jake is suspicious about the coincidence, but Claire calls it destiny. And she doesn't mind that Jake's with Jane. It means their time together will be even more special. And as she's putting her hands all over him, Jane returns, oblivious, and sends Claire out to get the rest of her stuff. And Jake haltingly says there's something he and Jane need to talk about. Clip 7.
Just a sec, sweetie. I have to find this brocade.
Yeah, well, I gotta get something off my chest.
I love the way you put your feelings first. I'm sorry. I've been so busy. I'm all yours. Was that you wanted to say?
Well, you know, it went right out of my mind.
Oh! Dara's trolling Buncee!
Yep!
My least favorite. Also, how... Like, the show really wants us to believe that this character is, like... just a stunner in the sack, I guess. And I do not believe that.
Who, Jane or Jake?
Jane.
Oh, yes. Agree.
I mean, the two of them seem like it would just be kind of, I don't know, fine.
Mm-hmm.
What? Fine.
Yeah.
It's just I know it's a soap. I know this should not annoy me still after many, many decades of being a television watcher, but it does.
Yeah. Well, that is exactly why I cut that clip. So you're welcome, / I'm sorry.
Thanks.
So Richard's at the studio dismantling his office when Claire and her Shangsam mini dress show up. Clip 8.
Did you do what you're supposed to do?
Jake is an honest man, if you can believe that. He won't cheat on Jane.
Well, he did cheat on her with you at the design conference, if I recall.
Which reminds me, you owe me a bonus for seducing him so fast. But he's got the guilt now, so he won't touch me, period, exclamation point.
Okay, fine. Tell Jane that you slept with them. Tell her that, you do him every day at lunch.
Tell you what, make it an extra 50 and I'll jump Jane's bones.
Do whatever you want. Just get it done.
Finally, someone other than me is trying to queer this damn show.
I mean, that might make Jane's plotline sort of interesting. Probably not, because Jane is still in it. I forgot that Claire was a dick plant.
Mm-hmm.
His, like, increasing... They really need to let him grow a mustache so that he can twirl it, because Muldoon is not necessarily like he is trying very hard, but he's like a little nasally and not totally believable as this dastardly, like, Chris was perfect for this. You had a Chris.
Yes.
He's just out there in the desert. Call Chris.
Yeah.
And his weird hair. Get him back here to replace Patrick Muldoon and his weird hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, I mean, is this working for you, or you're just sort of like, I guess this is endgame, who cares?
I don't buy it. Like, he reads more like frat bro to me. And, you know, with all that implies, I know something's coming up that has that play out the way you expect. This seems like a lot of work to get him where he wants to go to me.
Well, and, yeah, I mean, the sort of knock on him previously is that he just uses women for their connections and money and whatever else. And he's, and that's fine. I think he was cast well for that, actually. Yes. But this, like, snidely borlash is, I don't know, not buying it.
Yeah. So at the garage the next day, Claire very reluctantly, air quotes, tells Jane she and Jake have been having an affair. Jane doesn't know she's on a soap, so her first reaction is to laugh. But Claire persists, which is when Jake walks in, forcefully denying it. Clip 9.
What, you forgot you did me all night long?
No. together once, but it didn't mean anything.
What?
I tried to tell you yesterday. I met her at the bar at the hotel the night of the design conference.
So you are having an affair?
No.
Jake, you slept with me and then with her. What do you call it, double dating?
Shane, I did it once. I'm sorry. I haven't done it again. You know how we were fighting that night.
Oh, so that makes it okay.
No.
Well, I hope you and your little tramp are very happy. I need some air. You're fired, bitch.
I actually am not okay with that because based on everything we've seen, Claire was like a really good assistant.
Yeah.
Also, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe keep Claire and get rid of this doofus who should be with Joe anyway. Show,
yes,
please.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Agree. And just once again, trying to make Jane act mean. It's not. It's not credible.
No.
We don't buy it.
Mm-mm.
Over to the studio where Richard is pondering his silver mannequins and evil when Joe comes in. She thought they could talk. Clip 10.
About what?
Well, I don't know. We've been through a lot lately and you seem pretty remote. I don't know where we stand.
Joe.
What?
He cannot stop telling you he doesn't want to be in a relationship. Nicely and rudely. Again, with the resetting, come up with a different way to let the new viewers know they used to be a couple.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Richard continues being very clear, saying they should stand apart, but Joe won't take get lost for an answer. Clip 11.
Don't you think it deserves one last chance? I'm willing to go the extra mile.
You know, you're so preachy. Just like at my engagement party when you lectured me not to marry Jane.
You didn't love her. She didn't love you.
Marriage is a business, Joe. And my business folds without a designer. And I'm out of business.
Well, you mounted a good show without her.
Those were her designs we used.
You stole her dresses? And then lied to me?
You believe almost anything, won't you?
You act like you just hate me.
I loved you. And it was the biggest mistake that I ever made. Do you think that I want a life of peanut butter and jelly? I want caviar. I want lobster. I want style in my life.
And to win at any cost.
Just figured that out. I always win.
No, you don't. You didn't win when Jane set off the sprinklers on your bogus show.
She had the stones to do that. I got Hannah told Jane.
You are a putrid excuse for a human being. I can't believe I tried to work this out. I can't believe I left Jake for you.
I can't believe that you're still here.
I'm already gone.
Oh, no.
No, you're not.
No, that's... This is not the moment where you get to make that kiss-off line where he's like, leave. That's what you say when they're trying to make you stay. Come on now. The next day, Joe goes to Shooters. She can't believe how sleazy Richard was, even though it's been pretty clear from the start. Jake guesses Richard got rid of Joe when he figured out she couldn't help his career, which is not quite true. He got rid of her when he thought she accidentally harmed his career in the volcano. And
with a volcano.
Well... And as Jake and Joe review the Richard timeline, they remember his breaking them up was part of his scheme and that they had been good together. And Joe says she's going to go away and clear her head for a few days. Does Jake want to join her? And when he hesitates, she guesses he really loves Jane and he agrees that he does for some reason. Mm-hmm. And the next day, Jane comes to see Jake at Shooters. She's been making dumb administrative mistakes at work because all she can think about is designing, which like... Dumb administrative mistakes is what you do, so this scans. She says this is where Richard would come in handy, and Jake offers to run interference between her and Richard, but she's not sure she can trust Jake either, and he feels the same about her after Sprinklergate. He doesn't know who she is anymore. Clip 12.
Well, I deserve the truth. I don't even know who you are anymore.
Who am I?
I am someone who hurts when my lover sleeps with a stranger.
Just, I mean, where is Alicia to be like, that's too many cliches for me.
Yeah.
Objection.
Yeah. Anyway, ultimately, they decide they're both sorry. He has forgiven her for her sins. Why shouldn't she forgive his? She supposes, and they hug. And Jake apparently goes straight from there to the studio, where Richard is still packing up, to tell him Jane is down bad, and he has a proposal. Richard should go back to work for Jane. Richard's ready for Jane to come back and work for him, but Jake's deal is that they'll be 50-50 partners with Richard taking orders from Jane, which is not how 50-50 works, but
no.
Okay. And Richard's also supposed to stay out of Jane's personal life, and they shake on it. This seems like a bad plan, but good luck, I guess.
Business, 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 business finale.
That's right. Yep. Finally, our A-plot, Billy Scumbags, a Catwoman.
Oh, my fucking God.
You know, when I prepared this rundown before I had actually watched the episode, just based on the synopsis, I was like, how much could Julie Newmar actually be in this episode? Turns out, really a lot. Like, really a lot.
And, you know, they put her, well, we'll get into it.
We will. Amanda goes to the St. Denis Club looking for a certain Arthur Field, but Tony Marchette's pipe-smoking henchman, undercover here as Jack, the maitre d', see me in the visual aids, tries to stop her since women are prohibited from this club, and Amanda ignores him, as she should, heads straight for her target, who is played by Michael Debar, Leon's boyfriend from Roseanne, from the early days of Leon. He's a hates that guy anyway. See him in the visual aids, you will be like, oh yeah, that guy. Arthur dismisses Jack. He's fine with Amanda being there since she works for him, which she does. This is how we're all finding out, I guess. He still hasn't signed her contract renewal at D&D, so she wants to know if there's a problem. There isn't, but he's glad she came by because he wanted to talk to her about Billy, who he thinks is quite an asset to the agency. Amanda will pass on Arthur's compliments, but Arthur also wants to give Billy a little plum by having him give the keynote address at the Coastal Advertising Conference. And Amanda is shocked because she was planning on doing that like she does every year, which even when Bruce was alive, seems weird. But anyway, Arthur thinks Billy deserves a crack at it. Clip 13.
I want you to nurture the boy, help him flourish, shepherd his rocket to the stars.
So that would make me the mothership?
You are invaluable, Amanda. And now you better skedaddle before Jack out there has me up on charges.
Shades of Loafhead making Andrea give Brandon the co-editorship of The Blaze because a lot of parents read it and they know that boys need extra help getting motivated to run things.
Yeah, pretty much what I had in my notes. So yes, we're
fuck these dudes.
Same page. Yeah. I guess we're supposed to think Billy is like de-sharkening because when Amanda gets back to the office, he's in a vest now. But anyway, we also learn
this vest.
Yes,
is offensive. Like it's felony bad. Like it's a sort of regular vest in the back, but then the front is this like almost Muppety shaker knit situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just in general, like there is way too much fabric on Andrew's shoe all the time. I understand his shoulders are a little tough to fit and it was the mid 90s, but the pants, I mean, it's like David Silver levels of bad. It's
well,
brutal.
We're only a couple of years out from Dawson's Creek times at this point, which is crazy to contemplate. But this is where fashion for men is going, unfortunately.
The massive Noel Crane sweater
The
haunts our nightmares.
Man. Anyway.
Oh, God.
This is when we learn that Arthur already floated the speech idea to Billy himself before talking to Billy's boss, Cool Choice Bro, clip 14.
So, did Field talk to you? I got the speech at the Coastal Conference, right?
I haven't decided about that yet.
Okay, I'll decide for you.
You don't have the authority.
Of course I don't. Just trying to make your life a little easier.
Try bringing me a cup of coffee.
Okay, then do I get to give the speech?
It's supposed to be about ethics and advertising, Billy. That's hardly your strong suit lately.
I'll take off my suit. I'll give the speech naked just for you.
Allison.
Yes?
You have the keynote address.
What?
Have it ready by tomorrow.
Amanda, thank you. What an honor.
You can't do that. Mr. Field told me.
Billy, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Oh, you didn't.
I'm really excited to hear how great the speech is going to be with one day's notice, by the way.
Like, yeah.
A normal person would have been working on this for weeks, probably, if it's this big
maybe.
Deal. Anyway, it's the same day, based on people's outfits, when we get to the conference, Allison giving Amanda a preview of her speech that she's already whipped up. And when we hear the praise, it's clear Allison should have definitely gotten at least a few more days. Clip 15.
So my speech starts out, every ad exec must fight the urge to violate ethical principles, but we all stumble. I do, you do, my CEO does.
You could rewrite that later.
What do you mean rewrite it? I mean that you're not going to say at a national convention that I have ever acted unethically.
I don't believe this.
Well, you better believe it, because that's what advertising is about. And if you can't do that, maybe you don't belong in this business.
I mean, I don't know why ethics and advertising would even be the topic, frankly.
Like, no.
Who cares?
If this is like practices we got busted doing and can no longer do because of the USDA, like how they used to have a lit cigarette behind a like cooked chicken and ads and stuff like that, which I love shit like that. But like ethics and advertising, it's advertising.
Yeah.
It's not why we're here.
No.
We'll go watch Mad Men. It's fine.
So then we're with Billy, who's just hearing from some Dennis he knows that Dennis just signed Julie Newmar to do some ads. She's so family friendly. By the way, Phyllis, Dennis is the new Phyllis because it was
thank
also
you. That's what
the
I was
St. Dennis
say.
Club. So this was 30 years post Batman. She was barely a nostalgia act at this point, which is basically what Billy says. He thought she got out of show business. But Dennis says she's planning to come back, and it's a coup for his agency since she's never done ads before. And then she's there trying to get past Billy to talk to Dennis, but Billy starts trying to pitch her himself, I guess, for sport? Clip 16.
Excuse me. May I steal you away for a few minutes?
Well, you just stole my heart in a few seconds. Julie Newmar, meet Billy Campbell. Big fan. Yeah, I've seen all your stuff.
Billy Campbell. You're such a big liar. I won't hold it against you.
Well, hold something against me, please.
I don't know what you're selling, but it's fun listening to the ad.
Well, you ain't heard nothing yet.
Well, that's true of most ads. I'm sure you'll do better next time.
He won't.
No, he won't. When we next catch up with Allison, she's trying out her whole ethics rap on Billy, whom she hates and who hates her. Make a friend, Allison. My God. How did you get here, either of you? Anyway, he's not listening as he tells her about meeting Julie Newmar, saying she was so charming and he doesn't know why she retired. And that's when Allison says women expire at 40 in patriarchy. Not the word she uses, but it's what she means. Mm-hmm. And he's like, getting your excuses ready early. But she doesn't need excuses. She got the keynote speech. And the subject changes back to Julie Newmar. Allison saying she has one not so charming quirk. She's in the room next to Allison's and watches TV too loud. And then Julie walks in with Dennis and Billy peels off to go try and eavesdrop, which is when we hear that Dennis signed her by buying some compromising photos of her from a tabloid before it ran them. You know, the kind of thing you discuss out in the open and at normal speaking volume in a public hospitality suite at an advertising conference.
Sure.
Which also, why is she even hanging around this event? Like, even if she's there for, like, to be trotted out by this agency, like, that's an hour's work. She wouldn't be
well,
there
and
every day.
Yeah, like, there are a lot of things like this in TV, but that meeting could have been an email. Just saying.
And at this point, it really could. It's 1996.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that if the photos had gotten out, they would put an end to Julie's Snow White comeback. And as a show of good faith, Dennis hands her the prints and negatives, assuring her they're the only copies. Clip 17.
As soon as you sign your contract, you'll get your first paycheck.
I've never been paid so little.
As soon as you're in the public eye again, your price will skyrocket. No question.
everybody wins.
No pay, but great exposure. We've all been there, Julie.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should consider spending that pittance on an acting coach, because when you and Billy are in scenes together, it's like, it's not like anything. It's just bad. It's bad
sure
acting. Bizad.
Sure is. So that night, Billy's in Allison's room helping her with her speech because, yes, definitely what this character would do at this point in his journey when he sees that she's fallen asleep. So he steps out on the balcony, crawls next door to Julie's, enters her room, and finds the envelope in the second place he looks, a dresser drawer. Julie, hotel rooms have safes. They're free to use.
Yeah. Actually, use the one at the front desk. It's much safer.
Yeah. So he's barely confirmed that it's the right envelope when he hears so much jingling outside the door. We established in the last episode, hotels don't still have metal keys. And if they did, you wouldn't put them on your key ring. So why is she making so much noise?
Did she just have like a sock full of dimes that was like, in case there's any burglars? Okay. Jules, yes, we're all rooting for you, really.
She played a cat burglar. Like, be a little bit sneaky, madam.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's enough notice for Billy to sneak back to Allison's room and leave the envelope under a towel on a chair before slipping out. And the next morning, Amanda's just arrived at Allison's room when she gets a terse call from Arthur, who has heard whom Amanda assigned the keynote to. And he lets her know that if she wants to keep her job, she better let Billy do it. And Billy himself is also in the room. Amanda takes the towel off the chair instead of just sitting on one of the other ones. Like, it's already weird. There's a bathroom towel on a chair, but under the circumstances, I would assume it was wet.
Yeah, which is going to make your suit wet. So you're going to have swamp ass at the conference. Mm-mm. No.
But whatever. As we all know, all of the sketchy stuff Julie has been trying to hide away is sitting there. And Billy plays dumb as Amanda flips through it, though he did hear some stuff was stolen out of her room last night. And obviously everyone would like to know why this is in Allison's room. Billy says they could claim someone planted them, and Allison is like, someone did! Clip 18.
Don't worry, we'll cover for you. Just amazed that you would try to end run me on one of my projects.
Your project? Julie Newmar?
Clearly there's a personal agenda fueling competition between you two.
I have no personal agenda.
No, of course not.
Well, the only thing to do is return these to their proper owner. The only ethical thing.
LOL.
Andrew Hsu, it's one thing when a good actor tries to be acting badly to telegraph to the audience. When a bad actor is acting badly, it's really funny. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that's true. So Billy brings Julie to Allison's room so they can give her back her nudes. And she is so much taller than everyone else in the scene that her height is almost a joke in itself. Like, you see this in the visual aids. She is towering over all of them.
Mm-hmm.
She assumes this is also a blackmail scheme, but Billy promises it's just a friendly gesture and comments that it's a shame how people take advantage. Like, he saw how bad her contract with Dennis is, for example. And Amanda can't say anything, but she does figure out what actually happened and looks ashamed of the monster that, as Allison put it, she created. But Billy will triple Dennis's offer if Julie signs with D&D. Clip 19.
We are very discreet with our own clients.
Well, you certainly know all the pressure points, don't you?
Yes. I just want to do what's best for everybody.
For someone so young and charming, you're very cold. I suppose that's considered a plus in your business, but I don't like it, Mr. Campbell. However, I'd rather have you with me than against me. And have all these extra zeros in my salary.
Atta girl.
Yeah, but also, like, if you think he's cold, which he is at this point, what is it about him that you find charming? Like, narcissists are cold, but they charm you by faking warmth, which Billy can't do because he's bad at acting. Just real weird. Anyway, Julie
this
takes
is his calves. You can't see them. They're under a mile of fabric.
Not in that suit. So she turns him around and uses his back to sign the contract, which is a nice bit of business. And when she's gone, Amanda is astonished, and Allison accuses Billy of blackmail. Clip 20.
No, just good salesmanship, Allison. Close call, Amanda.
If Allison's implicated in this theft,
it's gonna be a huge exposure problem for D&D.
I didn't steal those pictures.
Especially embarrassing if she's giving the talk on ethics.
What are you saying?
I think you should bow out on the keynote address. Say you got sick.
But I didn't do anything.
Allison, I know you didn't steal them, but Billy may have a point politically. I'm pulling you off the speech.
What?
Just to cover our bases. Billy, can you handle it on such short notice?
Sure, anything for the firm.
You planted those contracts, didn't you? You arranged this whole thing.
Yeah, let's see. I drugged you to sleep last night. I snuck out on the balcony, slipped into Julie's room.
He set me up. Don't you get it?
Yes, I get it. But D&D owns Julie Newmar now because of Billy. What have you done for the company?
A hell of a lot. And I stayed honest doing it.
Well, that's terrific, Allison. And I'm sure you'll get recognized someday for it.
Recognize this. Billy made me look guilty, and he's holding it over both our heads.
I just saved your bacon, Allison. A little thanks would be nice.
Slap.
Thanks.
I guess that's my cue to leave.
If only.
Finally.
I mean, speaking of finally, Allison is starting to understand the situation.
Yeah. And I'm not a big fan of soap slapping, but she, like, Courtney Thornsmith is clearly having a great time playing her, like, astonishment and disappointment. Mm-hmm. And, like, really wound up for a slap. Like, I think she might actually have hit him in one of the takes because there's, like, a little sting mark on his cheek that looks legit. So, run, Allison. Run, Eeyore. Run, be free.
It is so funny that the climax of the A-plot is Billy giving a speech at an advertising conference, and yet here we fucking are.
Fucking go. Yep.
Clip 21.
You know, at D&D, we won an award for our Goldenrod shampoo campaign. Well, thank you very much. But is there really any difference between shampoos? You know, we make people think that one is better. They buy the illusion that we've hyped, the illusion of glamour and the promise of sex, because sex is what sells, my friends. You know, sex is our best lie. And of course, lying is what we really do best. I know I do. I'm a liar. And a thief and an empty shell. I've stolen accounts. I've plagiarized campaigns. I've lost every friend. I've lost every human impulse. But then I'm a huge success. So it's all worth it. Because it doesn't matter if you're alone. Because when we're hot, we're always alone. So say it loud. I lie, and I'm proud.
Wait for it.
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I.
Billy as the Howard Beale of advertising is not it for me.
No. No. I'm bored as hell. And I probably am going to take it some more.
You only have to take it for a couple more minutes today, at least. So. At the reception afterward, everyone is coming up to salute Billy's grubby careerist ass, including Amanda, who looked disgusted on the dais, but now congratulates him. Everything he is, he owes to her, he says, which should be a real wake-up call for her, but apparently isn't, as she brings him into her room and kisses him. No! He pushes her away, asking what she expects in return. She just wants to eat all his great moves, which, like, she's seen them. Even he says that. So what is he buying? She strips to her bra and tells him to buy now, pay later, and help her off with her stocking. There's so much of this. It's not what I want for Heather Locklear or Amanda, frankly.
No, although Heather Locklear not bursting out laughing is really a triumph of the will, as it were. Well,
yes.
Sorry.
So our act out line is her telling him sex sells, but the camera pushes in on her face as she looks conflicted.
Is the cost too high?
Is it? Then we're in the boys' club, where Arthur is congratulating Billy on his coup the previous night, and everyone is smoking big fat stogies. But the coup Arthur is referring to is not the speech, nor signing Julie Newmar, because who cares? It's boning Amanda, which he somehow knows about, and Billy tries to deflect his questions about how the Ice Queen melted, but not for very long. Clip 22.
And I want all the details, Campbell. This is the information age.
Well, whatever you gentlemen can dream up, it was better.
Next on the Wild Thing Report. Jesus. Justice for Marianne Moore. Never forget. Oh,
indeed. So then we're in Allison's office as Amanda finds her putting her personal effects in a good old banker's box.
Mm-hmm.
Billy's speech capped off the weekend for her. Clip 23.
So what are you doing here now? Getting a jump on the competition? That's what you do, isn't it? Jump the competition? The whole company heard you two in your bedroom last night.
I do what I have to get ahead. I intend to be the last one standing at the end of the game.
Well, it must be pretty hard to stand at all. Spend so much time on your back.
So this isn't about the keynote speech. This is jealousy over Billy?
I have no claim on Billy. This is about choices, Amanda.
I choose to win.
You can't do it alone. We should be pulling each other up, not down.
I tried with you, Allison. I handed you the keynote address.
You gave it to me to hold Billy back. That wasn't for me. It was against him. So that you could climb higher.
Climb? I'm just hanging on. This is as high as the old boys' club lets us get. Just enough to see the top of our heads.
Well, I'm through climbing. I just came to get my things.
Oh. Oh, don't tell me. You're not quitting again.
Watch me.
I will. From the top floor.
You think you're gonna sneak into the big room inside Billy's pocket?
Billy, my dear, is snugly in mine.
I don't think so.
No.
Good luck to everybody.
But that line about all they see is the top of our heads is like pretty racy.
Yeah.
A little surprised, actually. Mm-hmm. Here's the other
surprise. I sort of couldn't decide if that was like them cleverly sneaking that in or if it was like not the smartest bulb where they didn't actually know what they were saying.
Well,
let's believe in them. Why not?
Speaking of sneaking things in, this is also the scene where we see the latest piece of art from the gala committee. And I almost missed it. It's so subtle. I had to go back and check it again. But the art is called Total Proof. Her and Allison's last words at D&D advertising were prophetic. You can't do it alone. Her final scene moment as a D&D employee was almost the end of the gala committee. So it's a photo of the Oklahoma bombing where they've sort of altered it to look like a vodka bottle.
Okay.
Is cut out of it, like those old Absolute vodka
ads. Right.
With Total Proof around it. So the artist said the piece was about the destructive nature of alcohol and violence in media, but the producers said it was too offensive to be broadcast, but because this episode was shot during a period known as double ups, which we heard about at the Stars in the House when they were shooting two episodes at the same time, perhaps in the chaos of this, or a rebellious member of the production crew snuck it in, but Total Proof was placed on the set despite the direct refusal of producers. So they had an emergency meeting between Gala and Frank South to discuss the incident, and the solution would be for Gala to fax drawings and descriptions of proposed artworks to South's office for approval after this. And I mean, it's pushing it. It's really pushing it. But you also can hardly see it. And you'll see it in the visual aids because I put it side by side. But yeah, it's wild.
That is, I mean, Jesus. There's a there's a lot of reference here that are upsetting. So, okay, nighttime fluffy soap.
Yep. And that's the episode!
Oh, God.
Let's name our MVP.
Marcia Cross.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Really always a good choice. I'm going to say Laura Layton for similar reasons. Really having fun.
Yeah.
Including when John Enos is blotting out both the sun and her.
No. And yet we know she's there.
We do. Least valuable player. I'm so sick of Billy. I'm so sick of him.
Whoever is naming these episodes, seriously, seriously, it's not okay. It's just not.
No, you're right.
Speaking of not okay, next time on Again With This, Peter and Michael take a road trip, Amanda takes the reins, David takes off, and the producers take stunt casting to the next level. You should take the maximum recommended daily dosage of Pepto-Bismol to get through our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, or buy a vintage Triumph and park it on the pool apron of our Patreon page. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including our monthly recaps of the 90210MG podcast. You'll find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Metaphor Salad Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Poor Man's Gordon Gecko, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Extra Zero, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.